Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Guilty was the verdict in the afternoon as a jury in the trial of Richard Satchwell found he had murdered his wife Tina at their home in Yall in 2017. The 58-year-old truck driver reported his wife missing in March 2017 and repeatedly lied to Gordy, journalists, family and friends, telling them he had come home from running errands to find she had left him, taking their savings of €26,000 with her. It took more than 6.5 years before Gordy discovered Tina had never left their home at Grattan Street in Yall. For more on this, we're joined by our reporter Barry Lenehan from the Central Criminal Court. Barry.
Yes, well, Cormac, a little earlier, Tina Satchwell's family emerged onto the steps of the court here behind me to declare they finally have justice over 8 years since their beloved daughter, sister, aunt and cousin was murdered by her husband, Richard. For so long, Tina's skeletal remains lay hidden in a clandestine grave in the Satchwell home. Richard's latest lie, which he presented to the court here, was to claim he accidentally killed the woman he had loved for 30 years with the belt of her dressing gown after she flew at him with a chisel. And it took the jury of 7 women and 5 men 9 hours and 28 minutes across 4 days to dismiss Richard Satchwell's story and find him guilty of murder. Now, as courtroom 6 filled up prior to 12:30 this afternoon, Richard Satchwell smiled, he joked with his legal team, but when the verdict came, he passed no emotion, his hands pressed up to his chin. Now, Tina's family, that they sobbed when the verdict came, their cries filling the courtroom here as many jurors also became visibly upset, and Judge Paul McDermott excused them from any further jury service for 10 years. Now, Richard Satchwell, dressed all in navy, he was led away. He'll return here next Wednesday to receive the mandatory life sentence for murder when victim impact evidence will also be heard.
During this trial, Tina was portrayed in a way that is not true to who she was. Tina was our precious sister, cousin, auntie and daughter. Her presence in our life meant so much to us all. We as a family can never put into words the impact of her loss that has had on all of us. Tina was a kind, loving, gentle soul who loved her animals like they loved her, and that's the way we want her remembered. Today, as a family, we finally have justice for Tina. In this time, our family would like to ask for privacy to begin our healing. Thank you.
And that was Tina's niece, Sarah, speaking after the court case, Barry.
That's it. And this was a major moment for Tina's family. They've attended the trial throughout, having to sit in court as Richard Satchwell portrayed Tina as abusive, someone with a temper who tried to attack him the day she died. Some family members gave evidence, including Tina's niece, Sarah Howard, who had, we heard from there, who had told the trial how Richard Satchwell offered her the disused freezer, it emerged, he used to store Tina's body in. For Sarah and the family, today, as we heard there, was about remembering Tina for the person she really was. And Sarah was flanked by 7 other members of Tina's family, including her mother, Mary Collins, as well as members of the Garda investigation team, and Tina's sister, Lorraine Howard. She had this to say.
We would like to thank the judge and Tina's team, Geraldine Small, Imelda Kelly, Maria Bresnan and Catherine McAleer. Your hard work, professionalism shone through like the classy ladies you were. We will never be able to put into words how thankful we are for you. We want to sincerely thank the judge, the jury, for their dedication. We would like to thank all the witnesses who helped us reach this verdict today. I would like to personally thank Sarah Howard, Tina's niece, who came up to give evidence and her support 2 weeks postpartum from her beautiful baby girl. You did yourself and Tina proud. Thank you to Anne-Marie Toomey and Dave Kelleher for putting the pieces together and finding Tina. We would like to thank John O'Connell, the victim support workers, for keeping our spirits high. And lastly, to Clara Quirk. Forever be grateful for you. You went above and beyond for our family. From a shoulder to cry on, to a friend to laugh with. You were the person to call, and for that, you will always be considered our friend.
And that was Tina's sister, Lorraine Howard, speaking a short time ago. Barry Lenehan is still with us. Now that the trial is over, Barry, what are the main talking points, I wonder?
Well, perhaps the fact that this day nearly never arrived, as it took 6.5 years before Tina's body was ultimately found under the stairs of her own home, despite several early flaws in Richard's account of her so-called disappearance.
Unfortunately, that line seems to have broken with Barry Lenehan. We'll try and get back to Barry just in a moment or two. But as Barry was saying, Richard Satchwell spoke publicly after he murdered his wife, Tina, and he maintained the pretense that she had simply disappeared and that he was appealing for her to come home. He spoke with Mary Wilson on this programme on the 6th of July 2017, just 3.5 months after he killed Tina. We can hear now some of that interview. And he told Mary Wilson at the time, first of all, that his life had been like ever since Tina went missing, in his words.
Miserable. It's really the only word to describe it. I was outside. My life, I wouldn't describe as a life anymore.
And I'm sure you go back over the last hours that you were with Tina and the 20th of March and so on. And as you look back on it now, what can you say about those last hours and what happened before she disappeared?
It's strange because on the morning we really didn't have much of a conversation. But the day before we were selling on the car boot in Carriage Hall and she was actually going around telling people how much she loved me and that she would never do anything to hurt me. And I didn't find that out until a week after she was gone.
Why do you think she would have said that to people?
I don't know, to be honest with you. That's just not really anything I can answer. Mm.
And that was Richard Satchwell speaking on Drive Time in July 2017 with Mary Wilson. And later in that interview, Mary asked Richard Satchwell this question.
If Tina's listening to you, what would you say to her?
What I would say is, Tina, come home. But my arms are always open, she knows that. I'm not angry with her. I'm not mad at her. I'm disappointed. But that's something we can talk about when she does come home.
Well, we can hear more of that interview a little bit later on in the programme. We'll go back to the forecourts now where Barry Lenehan is with us. We were talking about some of the main talking points now, Barry, and now that the trial is over.
And the main one being the fact that this day perhaps never nearly arrived. Richard Satchwell giving that interview in July 2017, but the initial search of the Satchwell home in June 2017 was deemed in an expert report by forensic archaeologist Dr. Niamh McCullough to be, quote, non-invasive. A new Garda investigation team appointed in 2021, which eventually brought the case here to the courts, but they stopped short of criticising the original Garda team during this trial. Also revealed today, Richard Satchwell's legal team made a last-ditch attempt to have the case thrown out, alleging Judge McDermott was trying to, quote, nudge the jurors towards a guilty verdict, whilst earlier they also sought to have the charge of murder withdrawn, saying the prosecution hadn't produced evidence of an intention to kill or cause serious injury. And as the assistant state pathologist couldn't determine Tina Satchwell's cause of death due to a very long post-mortem period, the only available account of what happened was Richard Satchwell's, that he accidentally killed her with the belt of her bathrobe. That application was ultimately rejected, and in the end, it was all academic, as this day finally arrived, the day where Tina Satchwell's family say they finally have justice and can begin their healing.
Okay, Barry Lenehan, thank you very much indeed. That's Barry Lenehan at the Four Courts. We will hear a little bit more of that Richard Satchwell interview on Drive Time from 2017. That's later in the programme. And after 5, we'll hear from Ralph Regal of the Irish Independent, who has covered this trial and case from the beginning. We'll return now to that remarkable case of Richard Satchwell, found guilty today in the criminal courts of murdering his wife, Tina. Earlier in, we heard an extract from this programme in July 2017, when Richard Satchwell, just 3.5 months after murdering his wife, spoke with Mary Wilson on Drive Time, maintaining the pretense that he was appealing for the missing Tina to come home, in his words. In that interview with Mary Wilson in 2017, Richard Satchwell described his search for Tina in the days after he murdered her.
So I went down on the Friday to see my doctor. I went to all the family and they hadn't seen anything of her. So that was it then. It's just, I don't know if you've ever seen a pane of glass shatter. That's what it felt like for me. Mm. And I went down to the guard barracks and reported her missing. I went and had a conversation with my doctor because I actually had an appointment to go to the doctor that afternoon as well. And here we are today, still no sign of her.
Did you try phoning her or did she leave her mobile phone in the house?
She left a mobile phone in the house. That's not unusual. She very seldom used to take it out with her anyway.
Mm. And that's Richard Satchwell on Drive Time in 2017. We can also hear this short clip again from the end of that interview with Richard Satchwell when Mary Wilson asked this question.
If Tina's listening to you, what would you say to her?
What I would say is, Tina, come home. My arm's always open. She knows that. I'm not angry with her. I'm not mad at her. I'm disappointed. But that's something we can talk about when she does come home.
I'm not angry, I'm disappointed, he said. That was Richard Satchwell speaking with Mary Wilson on Drive Time on the 6th of July in 2017. I'm joined now by criminologist Trina O'Connor, who's been following this trial, of course, and Ralph Regal, Southern correspondent with the Irish Independent, who attended the trial. And I might turn to you, Ralph, first of all, because he's been found now guilty of the murder of his wife, Tina. He was described, Richard Satchwell, by the chief prosecutor as an arch manipulator who told lie upon lie in a bid to conceal what had happened. You might talk us through some of those lies he told Gordy and how the Gordy managed to disprove them.
Yeah, there were six key lies. And I think firstly what they did was they focused the Garda attention on the circumstances in which Tina disappeared. And the more they picked at his web of lies, the more they realised that something awful had happened to Tina. Firstly, he had said that his wife had vanished on March the 20th, 2017, with €26,000 in cash from their life savings. It had been kept in a tin in the attic, and she had taken two suitcases. Now, there was a significant change in the Garda investigation in August 2021. In that Superintendent Anne-Marie Toomey took over the investigation. And the first thing she did was she ordered a complete review of all of the evidence. And she said that in early 2022, she came to the belief that Tina Satchwell was no longer alive. And towards the end of 2022, she came to believe that Richard Satchwell was no longer a witness, but that he was a suspect. They threw their net very wide. They got a lot of advice. They got a lot of support. They went to the National Economic Crime Bureau of the Gardaí, and a forensic accountant went through the Satchwell's finances. And they found that there was no way they could have saved €26,000. They were both on social welfare. They did car boot sales work. He had let on that from the sale of a property in Fermoy and the purchase of the property in Youghal, where Tina's body was found, that they had a lump sum of cash left over. The accountant found that there was just €320 left from that. The second thing was, I mean, you had the lie about the money. Then you had the lie about what had really happened to Tina, because he told Gardaí that she had left the house with the money. But at car boot sales, after she had vanished, he told people that she had come down with a very serious respiratory infection, that she had lost 4 stone in weight. She was being treated by a doctor in the UK, and that she was living with her sister in the UK. And Gardaí began to wonder, like, why were these different versions of the story? And of course, then you had mention of GPs, and the GP's evidence was very interesting, because one GP said that they absolutely did not advise, as Richard Satchwell claimed, that he should give her time. He should let her, you know, give a couple of days, give her a bit of space, and that she might come home. The GP said that conversation never took place. Okay. And another GP then said that they had not given any advice about domestic violence or about an attempt at self-harm.
So
that
all
Mr.
of the,
Satchwell had claimed.
All of the lies that he told the Gardaí, they found, were mounting up. There was also discrepancies, Ralph, in his evidence around the timing of his movements. You might talk me through that.
Yeah, and I think that was critical as well, because Richard Satchwell had a very detailed outline of precisely what happened on March the 20th. And he said that he had gone on an errand for his wife. He had gone to Dungarvan. He had stopped at a church to light candles for their dead parrot and his wife's dead grandmother. He had gone and done the shopping in Dungarvan, and he'd driven home. There was no sign of Tina, he said, in the house when he arrived. And critically, her pets were still there. And that's the one thing that triggered a lot of concern within Tina's family, because Tina didn't have children and she considered her pets to be her children. Okay. She had a dog, Heidi, she had a dog, Ruby, she had a pet parrot. And the timings of his movements, which Gardaí were able to trace through GPS, through data from his phone, through CCTV footage, did not exactly match what he was telling them.
Can I ask you about one other intriguing element of this case? And this is minutes before the jury began their deliberation, when all the evidence was heard. The defence tried to get the jury discharged. Explain that to me.
Yeah, very much so. What happened was that there was a little bit of legal argument in this case. There was legal argument over whether the jury should hear Richard Satchwell's exact reply to the charge, which was he was charged, of course, on October the 13th, 2023 at Cove Garda Station with the murder of his wife. And he replied, guilty or not guilty? Guilty. The defence had tried to prevent that being put to the jury and were overruled by the trial judge, Mr. Justice Paul McDermott. There was also legal argument after the judge's charge to the jury on Tuesday of this week. Brendan Graham, the senior counsel for the defence, applied for the jury to be discharged. And he did so on the basis that he said the prosecution case had ignored, or sorry, the judge's summation of the trial and the prosecution case had effectively ignored or not put sufficient weight on some of the defence arguments. And at points he described what the judge's summation of the trial was, that it was a second speech for the prosecution.
Okay. And that's why the jury, there was an attempt to discharge that jury. The search of the house, there were two searches, one in 2017 and one in 2023. And anecdotally, people would have said that the remains of Tina were in the house. How were they not found by the Gardaí in the initial search? What was said or what we know about those searches, Ralph?
Yeah, that's a very significant question. I think it's a question that probably will be addressed over the coming days and weeks. The house was searched in June of 2017, which would have been about 3 months after Tina was dead. And we now know that after Tina died, Richard Satchwell claimed that he held her dead body in his arms overnight. He then placed the body on a sofa. He then put the body in a chest freezer for temporary storage while he excavated a grave under the stairwell. And shockingly, and in what the prosecution counsel, Geraldine Small, described as the ultimate act of cynicism, he actually later offered that chest freezer to a member of her family. And but the house was searched 3 months later, but it was not an invasive search. And there was nothing dug up. There was nothing looked at in terms of, you know, disturbing floors or walls or whatever. Very different to the search that happened between October the 10th and 13th, 2023. Now, that search was ordered by Superintendent Toomey. It involved the Garda Technical Bureau. It involved a contracted team of construction workers. It involved a forensic archaeologist. It involved a forensic anthropologist. It involved ground mapping radar. But critically, it also involved a cadaver dog from Northern Ireland called Fern. And apparently when Fern was examining the house, the dog showed immediate and focused attention on the stairwell area, which of course we now know that's where Tina was actually buried.
Okay, my goodness. Ralph Regal of the Irish Independent, thank you very much indeed for running through some of that evidence. I'm joined, as I say, as well by Trina O'Connor, who's a criminologist. Trina, you're very welcome to the programme. You've been listening, you've been following the case, as I say. Knowing what we know now, Trina, what do you make of Richard Satchwell's behaviour after he murdered his wife, Tina, from a criminology perspective?
Okay, well, I think a lot of killers of this nature who engage with the media, they do so because of a few different factors, and some of them may apply in this case. So I suppose psychologically, you're looking at the killer's personality and the motivations. So they play a part in their choice to go to the media or to court the media, because it's almost like a public relations exercise for them. Like a public appeal, for example, can be a way for them to present themselves as the victim and also, in their mind, control the narrative around a disappearance such as this. It may also be an attempt for them to evoke sympathy for themselves and promote their innocence, remove them from the case so that they're the one who's suffering. Mm-hmm. It uses emotional manipulation as well when you court the media. So it's they highlight their own loss and that diverts attention away from their guilt. And it can also be a way of trying to, I suppose, manipulate the public at large and also the investigation team so that they will consider them as a victim rather than a suspect.
It must be an extremely difficult thing to do for anyone. I mean, to look at what he did in the weeks and months after the killing and all we know now, to carry on almost as normal in what was anything but normal at the time. I mean, what does it say about a person's character?
Yeah, well, I suppose the psychology of the person that keeps the remains of their victim close by, or even in this case within the home, it could be a way of that person trying to cope with their actions. And in some instance like this, it has been reported that people say that they took very good care of the remains after the killing, and in that way, that's some way in their mind of them atoning for their actions. Now, there also could be a morbid obsession with the victim, and they still want ownership of the victim afterwards. And there's a complete controlness and a smugness that comes with that, and that's almost ego driven. So the personality type would have an influence on whether they would keep the remains. In this case, what happened with Tina's remains.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise, criminologist Trina O'Connor, and beforehand Ralph Regal, Southern correspondent with the Irish Independent. You're welcome back. We're returning to the news now that Richard Satchwell has been found guilty of murdering his wife Tina in their home in Youghal in 2017. For more on this, we're joined by Sarah Benson, who's CEO of Women's Aid. Sarah, you're very welcome to the programme. Can I get your reaction to the verdict today?
And indeed, thanks for having me on. Women's Aid strongly welcomes the unanimous verdict today, finding Richard Satchwell guilty of the murder. So it's a situation of justice delayed, but not justice denied. And our thoughts are, of course, with Tina's family and her other friends and loved ones who we know from maintaining the femicide report for Ireland and our contact with other bereaved families that this will just be one step on a long journey to process the trauma of losing somebody to murder.
Yeah, and it's a shocking case. We were looking, incidentally, since you mentioned femicide, at the numbers of femicide today, and the number of women who've died violently in Ireland since 1996, 275 women. And of those cases resolved, how many can you tell me are killed by their current or former partner?
The most common scenario is to be killed by your current or former partner, and it's one in two, more than 55%, and 63% of the cases resolved, women were killed in their own homes, which makes the home the most dangerous place for women to be at risk in Ireland. And cases like these, awful as they are, and, you know, in some cases, you know, there's some sensational aspects to this, but they reveal the sadly commonplace reality that this is yet another woman who was murdered by her partner.
Doesn't it make the issue of domestic violence and coercive control and abuse, gender-based abuse against women, and a refuge and an education program that you can get out of that situation and that there is support, doesn't that make all of those issues extremely important, or am I wrong?
No, you're completely right. We have an epidemic of gender-based violence and domestic violence in particular in this country. One in three women, 35% of women, more than one in three, will suffer psychological, physical or sexual abuse from an intimate partner. And these killings are at the hard edge. But what I think is important is there's this opportunity to discuss things like it isn't always physical violence that is the marker of the risk of fatal violence in cases like this, where obsession, possession, you know, treating and referring to somebody as though they were a possession, like a trophy wife, all of those can be warning signs of somebody who has a possessive nature and may be coercively controlling. And we know from the UK, domestic homicide reviews have shown that sometimes the first act of fatal physical violence is an act of fatal violence. So we would encourage anyone who has been disturbed by this case, we're all disturbed, but disturbed in the sense of wondering, is my relationship healthy? Is my partner's controlling behaviour a mark of love, or actually a mark of somebody who doesn't trust me or doesn't see me as an equal? And we would encourage anyone who has any concerns, not a crisis point, any concerns about your relationship, to reach out to the Women's Aid National Free Phone Helpline, which is 1-800-341-900, and that's 24/7 every day of the year.
Okay, and that will bring some solace, I'm sure. Sarah Benson, CEO of Women's Aid, thank you so much indeed. That number again, 1-800-341-900. There's also help available at rte.ie/helplines.